inside, rainy day feeling again. And soon my tears, they will be falling like rain.
Coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, the fresh water supplies in countries hit by the Asian tsunami are under very serious threat. According to a United Nations report, drinking water sources have been contaminated by salt water and sewage, and every well in Sri Lanka may have been affected. Hazardous materials such as toxic waste and asbestos from buildings may also be in the water in some areas. The study is the first attempt to assess the environmental damage caused by the December 26th disaster. Well, our dear friend James McCanney, physicist and professor, he went to the South Pacific. He's got a report for us in just a moment. And we're also going to talk with him about some things that are going on in space, way up in space. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Professor James McCanney, Master of Science, a physicist who has spent decades promoting his theoretical work showing that the solar system is ever-changing and is electrically active. Now, these theories have been confirmed with space probe data and prove that there are definite Earth effects resulting from our sun's electrical activity. He has openly opposed NASA's view that outer space is electrically neutral. McCanney was a faculty member of the physics and mathematics departments of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He has researched theoretical celestial mechanics and plasma physics. And for most of us, these are simply the studies of planetary motion and electrified gases in outer space, and has presented these theories at the Los Alamos National Laboratories and American Geophysical Union. Tonight on Coast to Coast, many things to talk with James McCanney about, and his website is linked up right now under his name on coasttocoastam.com, because he has got much posted there these days. James, welcome back from the South Pacific. How are you?
Well, George, very good. And it seems the last time I was talking to you, I was sitting on a mountainside in the rain in a Jeep with a very feeble cell phone connection.
Well, I'm telling you, it was amazing it had worked as well as it did that day, James.
I know, and I thank you also for getting a hold of me and allowing me to come on that night to dispel rumors floating around that, of course, that was the February 3rd.
That's right. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on, James. These rumors that some people are using your name in chat rooms and on websites and things, taking advantage of your work and then changing things a little bit. But we'll bring that up because I think that's a story all by itself. And are you weathering that storm, by the way, you know, with what people are doing?
It's constant. And what a lot of people, especially the people who are actually paid to do this, I mean, this, when you see the amount of time that some people put in on this, it's a full-time job, and nobody would do this. Nobody would have enough time unless. But what you have to understand, and these people have to understand, is I've been dealing with this my entire career. Once when I was in Cornell, of course, I was not thrown out once, but twice, once from physics, once from the math department, and for writing my material. And it, from there, my papers were being published in astrophysics journals. The black ball letters went around in the background whenever I would try and contact someone or go to a meeting to talk. The flurry of don't talk to this guy, don't allow this guy's papers to be published. It's constant. It's just been through my entire career. So for people who are doing this now, I just want to let them know that
we're going to get you. We're going to get you. If you're doing this to James McCanny, we're going to get you.
Yeah. And so, but the bottom line is I have gone to, I'm still going to the international meetings. People really don't know what to do with me because they're coming to the same conclusions that I wrote about in 1979.
Absolutely. Jim, I want to, because you're with me for the full 3 hours, and we're going to take phone calls the last hour. I want to break this down into a couple segments tonight so it is understandable for all of us, specifically me. I want to talk about weather and tsunamis this first hour, and then in the second hour, let's talk about Comets and Velikovsky, who continues to amaze me with the work that that man had done. And so let's do this. What, first of all, got you to go out to the South Pacific after that tsunami? I mean, why'd you do it?
Well, I had just come back from examining some weather work, and that was in early January, and I had some postings on my page, and I identified what convinced me that there was weather manipulation occurring in the early, this was January 1st. I was out also over the Pacific measuring satellite influence on weather system, specifically one that was dragged down from Oregon to southwest right of California, and it sat there, and there's currently a system, the same type of system that's just sitting there. It's a cyclonic storm, which is pulling moisture off the Pacific and dragging it into California. So my question is, are these storms hitting California man-manipulated? They certainly look like it to me. But then to answer your question, the whole issue of tsunamis came up, and like I tell people, when you hear me talk, it's not because I read it in a book or looked on somebody else's web page. It's because I went there myself and studied it. So I went to the South Pacific to look at tsunami breaches that have occurred in the past, and then also to look at the ones that are sitting there ready to go now.
And that could include hitting us on the eastern coast, right?
Right. The one, there are some of the tsunamis are directional in that the backwash would actually hit the island, the volcanic island that they left, so blocking it in a sense from going in that direction, and that would reverberate as a double wave going in that direction. Some of them are pointed southwest, some are pointed north, but the ones from Kamchatka, I always have trouble pronouncing that, in the peninsula up in Russia, mm-hmm. then the Aleutian Islands, the Hawaiian Islands, especially the Big Island of Hawaii, has some pointed directly at the west coast of the U.S. And these are 5 to 6 hours out in time, and these are mega tsunamis. And this term comes from the geologists who have been studying this, and I also wanted to give credit to the people who somewhat directed me, guys like Gary McMurtry and Walter Dudley, University of Hawaii geologists, and other geologists who have studied this extensively and have written papers and have been somewhat of a silent voice in the background, and now finally they're getting a little bit of airtime. But
is it your opinion, though, Jim, that something is happening to this planet, whether it's starting to crack from within or whatever it's doing, something dramatic is happening?
Here is my statement on all of this, including global warming. We are coming out of an ice age, and that ice age didn't just happen by itself. It's one of the great mysteries of earth science, geology, climatology, whatever, is how did Earth all of a sudden become embroiled in a major ice age, and these have happened in the past, but it's not just an ice age. Many other things happened at that time. We had a physical pole shift of the Earth, and many authors have talked about this. I've talked about relocating the old North Pole, which is in fact, the U.S. Geological Survey recently finished a study of where the old Laurentian ice cap was, and it's centered around a point south of James Bay up in Canada. And when I talk about it, I talk about it being north of the state of Michigan, mm-hmm. Canada. But the bottom line is the Earth is relaxing from a major event that happened many thousands of years ago, and I don't put a date on it.
Now, what do you mean by relaxing?
What happened is a large celestial object came near Earth, did not collide, sent a gravitational wave into Earth. And all of the details of this, of course, I have a couple chapters in my recent weather book, but there was an influx of water. We were blocked from the sun's radiation for about probably a 20 to 40 day period as we moved through this comet tail. And that's when the ice age occurs. That's what caused the ice age. It's what caused the pole shift. And also in my study of tsunamis, what I really gained an understanding of is how these plates can shift over one another. But it takes energy to do that. They just simply don't do it by themselves. So there's many myths that have been generated by...
Something has to jumpstart this?
Something has to cause it. Plate tectonics. Geologists draw pictures and they have subduction and plates moving up and over each other. But if you look at the physics of it, there's no force that can cause a planetary plate to move sideways. There's simply no force. I mean, you can draw all the pictures you want, but a physicist has to go back to ultimate causes, and there is no force that can create sideways movement on a continental shelf. This is a long, detailed description, but the bottom line is we, as an Earth, as a planet, we are relaxing from a major celestial event. And as we actually get back to normal, after the ice age occurred, there was a very long, gradual increase in temperature.
Right.
And then the melting of the glaciers, which we are seeing.
Which is happening now. As a matter of fact, I saw a picture just a few days ago of before and after of the last 50 years. And it's amazing. What was a frozen tundra-looking area is now, just loaded with vegetation and the lake. And everything seems to have receded in terms of ice.
Right. And that is what I call relaxing from this event. Not until scientists in evolutionary biology, in geology, in planetary science, in climatology, not until they understand what happened and what we are really doing will the total picture come to light here.
Are we going to get more and more of these major events that we're getting, these volcanoes? I mean, Mount St. Helens, I thought was going to go this year. We'll have to watch and see what happens. But are we going to get more of these, more volcanic eruptions, more tsunamis, things like that? And even here in California, you talk about strange weather, Jim. It hasn't rained out here since 1883 like this, and I think it's going to pass that record. What's going on here?
Well, I believe there's a combination of natural effects, which are the jet streams. The thing that is not included in any weather model, and in fact, the BBC and India Daily just came out with articles stating that around the world, weather prediction models, even on a daily basis, even to predict something as simple as temperature, are off completely. They're totally out of whack with reality, even on a next day basis. And so the bottom line is there are two things going on. One, meteorologists don't understand that the electric fields passing by us every day in space from the sun, the electrical component, is a major factor. And the number two, meteorologists simply don't understand the concept that I just talked about, that we are coming out of a major change. That hasn't been factored in. There's a myth that the sun puts out exactly the same amount of energy every day.
That's not true.
No, it's not true at all. So how can you have a thing called climate when the sun is variable on a daily basis?
Yeah, I know that's not true because my friend, James McCanny, wrote a pamphlet called Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, and I learned from that.
Right. But so there's all of these factors, plus I am 100% convinced that from my own measurements, and once again, this is not something I read in a book or thought about, and of course there's the great book right now, Crichton's book, State of Fear, dealing with this issue on somewhat of a science novel, science reality type of book. But I have measured this directly for my own benefit because in early, about mid December, actually as far back as November, I was watching them play with this storm off of Oregon. It would form and then dissipate, then form, then dissipate. And I said, that storm is being manipulated. And because of it was cyclonic, that meant they were using the laser beam technique in which they discharge an ion beam. It's a ionized path from the ionosphere down to Earth, and it's caused by a laser beam. And that storm would form and dissipate, And then finally they started dragging it south. And so I positioned myself about 200 miles off the west coast, actually outside of north of San Francisco.
Okay.
And was able to see from high altitude that laser beam. And I was able to triangulate and satisfy for myself that this storm was being manipulated. So you add in the manipulation factor. I believe I've seen other storms.
Well, let me ask you, though, Jim. Assuming the manipulation is occurring,
right?
Why? I mean, what are they trying to do with it?
I don't know. And one has to ask now. There's another page, of course, Bearden's page. He talks about this. He talks about scalar manipulation. There are a number of methods to manipulate weather. And what they do, in fact, when this all started, they didn't know what they were doing. They were just shooting beams of electromagnetic energy around. And eventually, like kids with matches in a can of gasoline, found out how to manipulate things. They are taking energy sources and weather sources that are already there and modifying them by various means, and they can move them around. And they can cause patterns which would normally move and dissipate in the normal weather patterns of the Earth. They can cause them to stay there. And that's what I believe is happening southwest of California right now. And there's a little cyclonic storm just southwest of San Francisco.
Well, I'll tell you one strange thing. Because last year when I was here, and in Nevada too, they were talking about droughts. They were talking about what will happen if the Colorado River dries up.
Right.
And all of a sudden, now we've got this deluge of water and rain that's going to last a long time, I think. I wonder if you're right. I wonder if they did that because we were in a drought condition.
Well, they can stop then.
Then they can stop. But they haven't yet.
To stop.
They haven't. This is like that Mickey Mouse Fantasia movie.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think we're at the part where the water is breaching where Mickey is continually throwing the water there. The other part of this is if there is an earthquake or tsunami that would come into the California, especially the LA Basin, or that could reach as far as the San Fernando Valley. In fact, if you had a large tsunami that could reach over that and into the valley, it would become the San Fernando Inland Sea.
How high would that tsunami have to be?
Well, now, this is something that I learned recently. Some of these tsunamis that they call the mega tsunamis are extremely large, and they have a shorter base wavelength than the, say, some of the shorter ones.
Well, the one that hit Indonesia and Sri Lanka and Thailand, was that a mega tsunami? But did it have short waves to it?
No, that was actually a fairly long base wave, and
right.
It was not that high. Actually, that...
It was like 80 feet, wasn't it?
In Sumatra, it was 80 feet, but by the time it got to India and Sri Lanka, it was much shorter. It's the wave reduces in altitude and amplitude as it moves out.
Okay,
because it's a circular wave. And you can look at this in a pool, throw a marble or a pebble in a pool, watch the waves go out, and you'll see that they get smaller, the amplitude gets smaller as they go out.
Sure.
And so the farther away, but they also have different characteristics. Some waves carry better over long distances. The one in Sumatra affected boats as far away as Africa. And my question also was, what happened to Antarctica? We've never gotten a real story out of what that wave did to Antarctica.
All right, but you're not saying that this December 26th tsunami was man-made, are you?
No, I'm not. And I've gone back and forth. There are people who have said that it was. It has all the characteristics of a naturally occurring tsunami, with the breach that occurred, with the landslide, the underwater landslide occurring after the very intense earthquake. And it has all the characteristics of a naturally occurring event. Whether it was triggered, that I cannot say.
Based on a relaxing, you think, of the planet?
That or man-made, I don't know. And I don't see anything, there's no evidence that I have that it's man-made as a scientist.
Well, when we come back, Jim, tell us a little bit of what you saw when you went out to the South Pacific. Our guest is James McKinney. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now. City of Angels, Premier Radio Network presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
The final days now of Art Bell's interview on Mel's Hole, given away to you on a CD for free when you order the After Dark newsletter or renew. This is it. We're taking it right to the end of Feb, and that is it. So if you've been waiting for it, now's the time. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, James McKinney, our guest. James, when you talk about they want to manipulate the weather, they are doing this, who might they be?
Well, there are many countries actively involved in weather modification programs. The United States has been, Russia has been. So they, I don't know. But when I see things happening off of our own coastline, I only can ask two questions. Is it being done by our own supposedly Defense Department, whatever you might call it, or... if it's not, then why don't they know about it, and who is doing it? So I don't know myself, and I can't claim to know, but what I do is I study this, and I am 100% convinced that, in fact, there are some people who believe that there is literally a weather war going on around the world.
Well, let me tell you, just here in California, a lot of people have written me since this storm that we've been in, and they say when some of the clouds break, they see planes above the clouds with laying down new clouds, basically. Now, that's something.
Right. And in my weather book, I have a picture, a close-up picture of a what appears to be a commercial transport plane with no designation, no designator on it, it's just a gray paint. So, and clearly flying over this country in our airspace, so obviously somebody knows about it.
And okay, then, but what you're saying, though, Jim, is you're saying that this weather that we've been having, this bizarre weather that's happening not only in the United States but around this planet, is being done intentionally. It's being manipulated by man.
I'm saying two things. Some of it, and I want to make it clear that not all the weather is being manipulated, only small regions.
Understand.
Yeah, but the yes, that there is a good deal of manipulation going on. The other thing I wanted to see when I went to the South Pacific, and it was, the circumstances got to be very difficult for me to maneuver, let's put it that way. But I wanted to see if, in fact, there had been any attempt to put, let's say, charges or some kind of explosives in these plate regions, if there was any indication that this may have been done, to have things in place to create tsunamis as a military weapon.
Now, how were you able to check into that?
Well, that's what I was trying to do, and I still have some ideas, but when we tried to fly out at night on a clear ocean, open ocean with the weather clearing, all of a sudden there were squalls that came up out of nowhere, and we just had to turn back. So, but the idea was to fly these regions at low altitude and look for any traces of vehicles going in, you know, because you can't go in and drill without heavy equipment. So we were going to look for traces of that kind of thing into these areas where the fault lines are.
But are you saying then it is possible that this tsunami might have been created by man testing some things on the bed of the ocean?
I'm saying it's possible. I don't have proof. For example, anything in the Sumatra area was, there seems to be some circumstantial evidence that people seem to be very ready to get in there with oil contracts, et cetera, because it is an oil-rich area. The other thing that's going on behind the scenes in all of this is a worldwide grab for oil. When we moved all of our manufacturing over to China, China all of a sudden became the sleeping giant and awoke, and it all of a sudden had an insatiable need for energy. Its long-term goal was to build a bigger infrastructure of electrical energy. It's doing that in a number of ways mm-hmm. now. But the bottom line is its immediate need for energy is enormous, and it could only be filled with oil. So it went to Venezuela, Brazil, on and on. And all of the countries at that time had to move out. Some of it was in response to our own movements to secure oil. And so this worldwide grab for resources, not only oil, but timber and other resources. I call it the last grab. That's my own personal term.
Well, you may be right there, Jim.
And this has triggered a very, behind the scenes, a very severe political situation. Nobody's talking about this.
Okay, but you're heading in some direction here. Tell me
obviously
why.
Obviously, this is well known within like security agencies in the United States. There are scenarios all over the place where we have to go in and secure oil for our own economy. And of course, I'm one of the proponents that, in my Atlantis to Tesla book, that there is an abundance of, I don't like to use the word free energy because energy has to come from somewhere, but it's energy that's available passing by Earth every day. Immeasurable amounts of electrical energy that is available for free if we learn how to tap into it and control it and then move it into our grid system.
Isn't that what William Wright called orgon, I think,
a long time ago? The guy I like to talk about is Tesla, and he was on the path to do that, and we have been moved away from that ever since all through the 20th century to a dependency on oil. But be that as it may, in the background is this huge political maneuvering of countries, international corporations, and it's very complex because we have manufacturers from the United States who have moved into China and Korea and the Philippines.
When you were out doing your research and you're looking at this vast ocean, did you think at all about what it might have been like with another continent out there somewhere, like Atlantis?
Oh, absolutely. Until you are out in the Pacific, you don't realize how much water there is on this planet. Absolutely, one of my fascinations, as with many people, has been with Atlantis. And back in the late 90s, I learned how the U.S. Navy had discovered some things in the South China Sea. And we're, in fact, investigating this. That's why we have many subs over there. We have quite a few sub bases off of North Australia and in that area. But the South China Sea was recognized by a Brazilian physicist back in the mid-90s as the place, the only place on the planet that could be the mother continent of Atlantis. Now, Atlantis was a worldwide, had worldwide colonies, but the mother continent, so to speak, was in the South China Sea. And when I first looked at it, I was like, you know, amazed, because I had always thought, well, it had to be in the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of very simple facts. In the days of Atlantis, the entire world ocean was called the Atlantic Ocean, the ocean of the Atlanteans. Is where the name comes from. The Pacific Ocean was named by when Magellan and Balboa discovered it back in the Middle Ages, you know, and all of the other oceans gained their name subsequently. In the days of Atlantis, the entire ocean was the Atlantic Ocean. And the Pillars of Hercules, it was not the Rock of Gibraltar as the modern Greeks had interpreted. It was Krakatoa and its group of volcanoes, which had big plumes of smoke coming out of them and basically reached into the sky. And you could see this from hundreds of miles away. And this is how the mariners came into Atlantis. And, of course, this is in the Sunda Strait between Sumatra and Java. And that was the entrance to Atlantis. And so the question is, did Atlantis go under from one of these planetary events? And it more likely, it seems, from the geology of that area, that it could have been in just a individual huge volcanic eruption and then earthquake and tsunami that literally cleared off the continent of Atlantis. And when it sank, it only went a few feet under the ocean. It didn't go miles down because when the Phoenicians, who were one of the remnant civilizations back then, when they went back to try and find Atlantis, they couldn't get in because of the floating bogs of grass mixed with ash. So obviously it was a tremendous, tremendous explosion of volcanic eruptions.
But it did submerge whatever buildings might have been there, right?
Right. And it took it under in a night, it literally, and that is the story. But I first caught on to this. I was doing a little web surfing, and I was looking for underwater video equipment that you would drag behind a boat and do, if this was for archaeological work, I was trying to locate some, as we wanted to go in the region north of Yucatan out in the Caribbean or in the Gulf of Mexico.
You were looking for gold, Jim. Come on, tell us.
Well, if I found some, I wouldn't mind, but there's a tremendous amount of archaeological Mayan ruins out in that plateau area north of Yucatan in Mexico. So I'm searching on the internet for this video equipment that and sonar equipment, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into a site and they had some links. And of course I followed the links. Well, it was a back door into this secure Navy site. And I started breaking off the URL from the right side over and backing into this site. And here I am into this naval site and website and looking at what they're doing. They're in the South China Sea doing video work with this equipment. And
that's interesting.
And the South China Sea is not a place where you would take a submarine. It's very shallow.
Well, isn't that also where we apparently, they say, hit a mound going at 40 miles an hour?
Right. That's the nose of that sub we all saw the picture of was all ripped apart. And it's actually been one of the complaints of the Malaysians, is we have so much submarine activity in that area. They've actually asked us to leave. But my view of this, I said, what are they doing in the South China Sea with submarines? Well, they were excavating, literally, these regions that I believe they found Atlantis. And then I had some corroborating evidence from a woman I met actually at a convenience store. We were in line, and she started talking about just other things, and all of a sudden it turns out her son worked at one of the installations in Australia, the submarine installations. And she said every day things came in off the submarines. They put them in like C-180s or whatever they are, you know, transport planes, and they flew them out to the mainland, the United States. And I'm going, what are they doing here? Obviously, something is coming in out of these submarines.
You know, I had heard, and there was no proof to this, that some country, could only be Russia or us, I think, in this case, dropped an atomic bomb on the floor of the ocean and created that tsunami.
Well, now, I've heard other things. Like I say, what apparently, at least the reports, and of course, I had not been to Sumatra at all myself and have no way to get down in the ocean to view. Apparently, everything that they're reporting, the breach in the ocean, the underwater landslide off of the volcanic ledges there, all point towards a natural event. But of course, if somebody were going to cover something up, they could make all that up too, you know. So I don't know, but I have no way of knowing. Certainly, exploding something under the ocean would be one way of creating that.
And it would take a pretty big explosion, James.
Oh yeah, yeah. But what you do is you just that's what you do. You create a disturbance under the water. A lot of people don't know that one of the plans for the invasion of Japan in World War II was to create a tsunami offshore.
How are they going to do that?
Well, there again, it would have had to have been a tremendous explosion as a way of softening the beach, so to speak, before they went in, because there were so many caves and tunnels in the Tokyo region.
I think they would have used one of our atomic weapons that they were just creating?
Well, they had two of them. They only had two.
Right.
That was the, you know, how were they going to use them? Were they going to drop them, or so that is a little page of history, but I imagine they would have had to use conventional explosions. Would not do that. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, this entire issue of man-made, I think it's time that the world set down their posturing. And we find out what these guys are doing with this tremendous technology that they've developed for our defense and the defense in other countries of their countries. But to find out, take a step back, because clearly this is only going to escalate. And if we do something, then somebody else has to do something. There are rumors that, for example, the severe weather in France of a year and a half ago, is that about when the time frame was caused by weather manipulation. And so there's many other incidents that have been viewed by some people as possible weather manipulation. But also the sun is way out of sorts. Its electrical energy is tremendous. We're having, even today, tremendous electrical flaring when we're supposed to be in a solar minimum. All of this builds up the solar capacitor, which we discharge as a planet. Everything in the solar system, satellites, moons, planets, discharge the solar capacitor, and that contributes to the energy equation that drives our weather.
We've been pretty lucky that we haven't really been blasted by one of these X-flares.
Oh, yeah, space is a big place, but when you see these things going off, and it's simply a matter of time until one of these really nails us. Back to the tsunami issue. Now, on my webpage, I posted a picture, and it's kind of a contest, and I know there's people out there that'll recognize this mountain. I posted a little picture at the top, but you can see the regions of this volcanic island where the ledges have dropped and moved and then sloughed off into what used to be an ancient ocean. And so people go to my webpage right at the top, you'll see an example of what causes mega tsunamis. These volcanic plates, what happens when a volcanic island is in an ocean, the edges break away and drift away, so there's no support from down below, and the volcanic lava keeps pouring out the top, which pushes down on the plates.
That's a weird-looking picture, Jim.
Yeah, and then do you know where that is?
Well, let me guess.
I'll let you guess before. I'll keep talking here while you're guessing.
Is that a big picture here we're talking about?
This is a massive volcano. It is huge, yes.
Well, I'm going to say that this isn't the one in Hawaii, is it?
No.
All right.
But it looks like, that's a good guess because it very much looks like one of the Hawaiian volcanoes.
Yeah, it does.
You can see the thing about this picture with the ocean missing, you can see the slough areas that have broken down and broken off, and some of these have slid out into this ocean area, maybe 40 or 50 miles.
Holy Toledo.
And that's what causes the mega tsunamis. Now imagine one of those shelves. You can see them breaking down kind of on the right side of the picture. Imagine one of those shelves just all of a sudden going whoomp and out.
And then that generates the force.
And that would generate the force to create the tsunami.
All right, where is this?
This is Olympus Mons on Mars.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I was listening to Richard Hoagland talk earlier about this, the creeping story on Mars about we're coming closer to understanding water. And for a long time, I've had footage of NASA, the early orbiters, and we see pristine riverbeds on Mars. We see a tremendous amount of erosion. My new weather book has 8 plates, which cover the entire surface of Mars, fairly high definition. And you can see the erosion. You can see where the water came off of the certain regions and formed deltas as it poured down into a shallow ocean. But this picture of Olympus Mons is a good one to show you how these mega tsunamis form.
All right, stay with us, Jim. We'll be back with James McCanny. We're going to talk about comets, Emmanuel Velikovsky, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505.